What's up, everybody? Time once again for the movie retrospective, and we're doing some more Hammer horror.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I think this is probably like, I don't know, I kind of feel like this is probably like one of the most iconic Hammer horror movies, just because it was kind of the first one to do a lot of the things that like a lot of the later Hammer movies would do. You know
this
what I mean?
Before boobs became center stage in Hammer horror films.
Now, there were boobs in this, let's be fair.
Yeah, it just wasn't. I mean, it starts dripping with it eventually. It starts to become, you know, kind of like Playboy magazine of the day. I mean, they don't actually show any nipple, but they were fucked. Hammer knew how to get asses into seats.
Okay? They did indeed.
They knew how to get young guys to come see these movies. And the sets got better as they went. But I guess this is the first one, and this is their introduction to the market.
Well, it's not necessarily the first one, because what ended up happening with this was that, you know, Hammer Studios, obviously, you know, back in the 30s and 40s, you had Universal, and you had kind of like all the classic monsters and stuff like that. But then the whole gothic thing started kind of falling by the wayside. Everybody started doing more like sci-fi, Atomic Age kind of stuff. So Hammer decides they're going to put their hat into the ring. We're going to revamp all of the old, you know, Universal monsters, but we're going to do it in glorious full color, and we're going to put, like, more blood, more smut, like, what they could get away with.
Yeah.
Now, actually, the first one they did...
So it was coming... So they were renewing themselves.
Right. Okay, but they were just saying, we're remaking these dusty old Universal monster classics, like, for a new generation, like, for the kids. And like I said, it's bright colored blood, more sexuality, because you could get away with more, you know, in the... You know, in the late 50s, early 60s, obviously, than you could get away with in the 1930s. And I'm not saying I really do like the 1930s Universal Monster movies, too, but they were definitely trying to update it, make it gorier, make it sexier, you know, and all that
so
kind of
Carmilla
stuff.
So Carmilla was Hammer, right?
But that was later.
Much later? Okay.
That was later.
That was straight up lesbian.
Well, that's right from the book, though.
Yeah, it's from the book, but that movie's fucking awesome. If y'all looking for a movie like that, see Carmilla.
Yeah,
it's good.
There have been a lot of adaptations of Carmilla, because, like I said, that's a pretty famous... it's a novella, actually. Yeah. It's not like a whole book, but yeah. So what they did, the first one they did was actually Curse of Frankenstein, and that was 1957. That also had Christopher Lee, I think he was the monster, and Peter Cushing in it. And because that one was so successful, they're like, well, shit, we did Frankenstein, now we're going to do Dracula. And they said that they really had no other actor in mind other than Christopher Lee to play Dracula, and obviously Peter Cushing playing Van Helsing. Now, this movie, watching it again last night, I was reminded, I was like, this is 1958. They got away with a lot of shit for 1958. I mean, it's very tame by today's standards, obviously, but all of the blood they showed, like the staking and stuff like that, they would not, absolutely have not got away with
it
that.
It had good special effects for the
vampires
turned into dust at the end.
And that was actually, that scene, from what I heard, was, like, way gorier in the sense, like, you could actually, like, see him disintegrating and, like, pulling his face off and stuff like that. But some of those, I heard that some of those scenes were actually, like, lost over time, but I think they found a Japanese print somewhere that still had some of those, so they're trying to, like, so I think in 2018 or something, they released, like, a restored version where they tried to put a lot of that back in there.
Stuff that was lost, yeah.
But, they did have a little bit of problem, because, like I said, for 1958, this was actually really shocking, and you had to think too that, you know, horror movies like this hadn't really been in this, like, this technicolor, you know what I mean, with all this, like, bright red blood splashing everywhere. So you had to think of that as well. So this was a lot of firsts. It was the first, far as I know, first Dracula adaptation in color, first appearance of Christopher Lee as Dracula, and obviously he's probably, after Bela Lugosi, and I would even argue that maybe him and Bela Lugosi on equal footing, because they kind of came at the character from different perspectives, but I mean, Christopher Lee is like the quintessential screen Dracula, I feel like. It's like really, really hard to top his performance. But him and Bela Lugosi, like I said, came at it from different angles. So this was also the first time that Dracula on screen had fangs, because if you didn't know, like the Bela Lugosi one, he didn't have fangs in that one. And the first one where they introduced the red contact lenses, That was the first time that had been done. And also, I think it was the first time that the vampire hunter, like Van Helsing, had like the box of like stuff like to fight the vampires, like the stakes and all that kind of stuff. So I think that, so this introduced like a lot of things that became iconic in vampire movies going forward. And it was kind of like the first time that it did that. So now I will say that I guess because of budgetary constraints, or maybe just because they thought it would work better as a narrative, this is not, I mean, it's sort of faithful to the original book, but not really. I mean, they made like a lot of changes. They're not crazy, but they did move some stuff around. But like I said, the 1931 version with Bela Lugosi, that was more based on the stage play rather than the novel. You know, there's not really been a definitive, very, very close adaptation. I think, like, I was watching the guy, like, Cinemassacre. He did a really good video about all of the different Dracula adaptations and which one was, like, closest to the book. And I think, like, the BBC made one in, like, 1977 or something like that, which was actually the closest. But even they changed, like, a lot of shit around. Now, this one, what they did, they got rid, this, I thought this was kind of interesting, and I didn't even realize this when I was watching it, but they set pretty much the whole thing in, like, Central Europe. It doesn't have the whole thing where it's like, oh, they go to Transylvania, and then Dracula, like, comes to England.
Yeah.
They don't have any of that. Like, it's basically,
like, he's been there forever.
Yeah, it's basically like he's just like the next country over. I think like where Dracula lives at the beginning, because I looked it up, I was like, where exactly is this? But where Dracula lives at the beginning is in Romania somewhere. And then, but the rest of the action doesn't actually, I don't think it's supposed to take place in England. It was shot in England, obviously. But it's supposed to be in Bavaria, so especially in Germany. So it's just kind of like across the border, like the country border. So it's, you know, there's no ships, there's no, they don't do any of that ship journey or any of that kind of stuff. And so I thought, maybe they just did that for, like I said, budgetary reasons. And because they wanted to maybe keep it shorter, because the movie's not very long. It's only like 86 minutes.
It's my understanding that Romania is like the Mississippi of Europe, isn't it?
I have no idea. I've never been there.
Yeah, I heard it's pretty, you know, I think it's, never mind. Yeah, like the lowest income.
Yeah,
kind of like backwoods and kind of.
Well, yeah, it might be. But like I said, that's kind of where they put his thing. So it's not like I said, they didn't have this whole like ship thing or anything.
Right.
And Jonathan Harker, the character, at the very beginning of the movie, you know, because like in the book and in some of the other adaptations, like he's a real estate agent, right? And he comes to sell Dracula the property that he's going to buy back in England. In this one, he actually goes just, you know, in the coach to, because he's just going, like I said, across the border to the next country. And he just goes over there like to act as a librarian to kind of catalog all of Dracula's collection of like all his books and everything. So he goes there to do that, but it turns out that he already knows that Dracula is a vampire, and he's essentially like a vampire hunter who's working as Van Helsing's protege, assistant, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like they're working as vampire hunters together. So in a way, like I said, that's kind of weird, but I can see why they did that, because it kind of gets you to the action like right away. It's like, look, everybody knows he's a vampire. Let's just kind of like, he also knows he's a vampire. So you don't have the whole thing. Like he does go to Dracula's castle at first, and then there's one of the vampire brides and all that, but he's not, there's not like that big long thing like from the book where he's like figuring out, oh shit, the guy's a vampire. He already knows he's a vampire, and he's gone there under false pretenses to like destroy him, right? So there's that. So another thing that they did that was interesting in this film too was that, spoiler alert for a movie from 1958, they kill Jonathan Harker off in the, like at the end of the first act. Like he comes there to kill Dracula, and he gets bit by one of the brides. Well, actually, there's only one bride in this one. He gets bit by one of the brides, and then he gets turned into a vampire. And then after, like, Van Helsing back in Bavaria or whatever finds out that Jonathan Harker, like, disappeared or whatever, he comes there to, like, figure it out. He sees Jonathan Harker walking around as a vampire, and so he kills him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Jonathan Harker dies and, like, is turned into a vampire and then dies. And then from then on, it kind of goes back to Mina and all those people and Van Helsing, and we're following that. So the thing about it, too, is that Christopher Lee in this, as Dracula, I think I've seen a couple things where they talked about him being in this, and they're like, he's literally only in this for 9 minutes, which is crazy because it seems like he's in the whole movie just because his presence.
Just cut up. Yeah.
Well, because his presence is so overpowering. I think the best thing about his portrayal in this, and he doesn't talk much in this either. You know, he was in, like, I think 9 movies where he was Dracula. He wasn't in the sequel that they made to this, which I think was Brides of Dracula, but that didn't have Christopher Lee in it. So he was in the next one, which I think was Dracula, Prince of Darkness. And I think in that one, he didn't say anything. Like, he didn't have any lines. This one, I think he maybe has a dozen lines, maybe. Like, at the beginning, he talks to Harker and everything like that. But the rest of it, he's just kind of, you know, he's just, like, a monster. I liked, too, that because I kind of feel like a lot of the later vampire movies, they tried to make the vampire more sympathetic, I guess. I think even Bela Lugosi's version kind of did that. You know what I'm saying? Where it's trying to make him kind of, like, elegant. And it's always seems like a nice man, you know what I mean? This one... they don't make him seem like a nice, but he's a straight up villain in this one. And I think it was like really well done because Christopher Lee is actually really, imposing. He's actually like really intimidating.
He's got a greater physicality than Bela.
Yeah.
He's taller and he's just,
he's a big fucker. I mean, yes. Well, you know, we did a show about Christopher Lee and
he's a lot
Peter
more athletic
Cushing
seeming. And
yeah. And they definitely wanted that to come across. They wanted Dracula. They wanted to go back to more like the Dracula from the book where he was more like a monster, rather than being like a sympathetic, kind of thing. Like in this one, he's very animalistic.
Yeah, not to belittle Lugosi's, for Lugosi was a fucking master at it too.
He was as well, but like I said, they're coming at it from a different portrayal, which is fair.
Lugosi's vampire was a smaller, more debonair type of guy, but just kind of rat-like and sinister, more of a sorcerer kind of an appearance to him, you know, somebody who could mesmerize you.
Yeah.
This, you know, Lee's version is more kind of like a damn Sith Lord, you know.
He's like a bigger sexual predator.
Yeah.
He's a big dude.
Well, like, he looks like he could beat your ass, too.
Yeah, he's very, very tall. He's very imposing. And he was quite young in this. I mean, he's still pretty young. Like, they tried to make him look a little bit older so he would look a little bit more intimidating. But, yeah, he's so large, and he just has this, like, really imposing presence.
Yeah, and you can't tell his physical condition in terms of, he's in a suit and a cape. He's just, he looks massive.
Yeah.
He's probably thin, though. I think he was kind of thin. But no, he was pretty physical, wasn't he? Doing mountain climbing and all kinds of stuff. I think Christopher Lee was pretty athletic for his time, I think. So he wasn't the kind of guy you wanted to tangle with, especially back then.
That's what I mean. He absolutely looks like he could beat your ass in this movie. Just because he's very large, he's very, like you said, he comes across, it's very, very physical, very athletic. Like, even just the way he moved, like, when they first introduce him, which I love how they introduce him in this, where he just appears at the top of the stairs and then, like, comes down. He comes down, even, like, the walk down the stairs, you can tell that it's, like, this dude is not really somebody to be fucked with. Yeah. And he really kind of really does run around. He's very, very, like, he just moves around a lot. He's very active.
Very Lord Vader. Very dark.
Yeah, and I really like that. Like I said, and they give him, like, just such an animalistic kind of thing, which I think worked really well. And I think that was another thing that was sort of a change-up. Yes, the original Bela Lugosi version had, like, kind of a, I don't know, like an aristocratic, sort of, like, romantic type of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas Christopher Lee's portrayal is more, like, carnal. He's, like, it's very, very, it's, I always want to say it's rapey. You know what I mean? Like, he comes across, like I said, he's very animalistic, but he's still, like, really sexy at the same time. You know, and he's, like, coming in the bedrooms of, like, the women, and they're just kind of like, oh, all right. You know what I mean? It's, like, kind of that kind of thing. Which, like I said, for 1958 was actually, like, a pretty controversial thing to be doing.
He's a lot more alpha.
Yeah.
He's like an alpha type vampire. But Lugosi's vampire was more like a sigma kind of a type.
Yeah, that might be a good way of putting it.
You know, still slick, but not, you know, in a different way. Dude snuck in the back door, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Lee was a lot more, like, intimidating, and he was just, like, gonna come in and, like, fucking grab your ass, you know what I mean? And so that hadn't really been done before. And, like I said, the fact that they didn't really make him sympathetic, they made him seem like... he comes across as like, it's believable that you would be like, oh yeah, bite me or whatever, but because he's like kind of sexy, but also that he's really monstrous and like needs to be destroyed. There's really nothing sympathetic about him at all. And I think maybe that's not only down to Christopher Lee's performance, which is great, but I think it's also kind of like because of how they set the story up, where at the very beginning, like, you don't, like, in the book, you almost have a little thing where Harker, before he figures out that Dracula is a vampire, like, they have some back and forth, so it's almost kind of like, you know, there's almost like a relationship or something going on there. Whereas in this one, Harker knows right away that he's a vampire and I've come here to destroy him. So you're always, like, from the very beginning, they've set it up as, like, a good versus evil kind of thing, like just right from the very beginning. So you don't really get a lot of time spent. They don't spend a lot of time establishing, you know, Dracula as a character or, like I said, anybody that you should feel sympathy with. You know, they introduce him and he seems kind of elegant at first, but really only a few minutes in, he starts to like monster out. You know what I mean? So he's obviously like a villain and he's obviously a bad guy. And this is something that has to be fought against. So like I said, you kind of like start following Van Helsing's character as he's trying to figure out like how to fight him. Another weird thing they did in this too, which I'm just so fascinated by all the different variations of like Dracula. They did like why they made particular changes. Like, I understand why they changed the whole thing. It's like, well, we need to take out the whole like Transylvania to England, this whole, because the book is very sprawling and takes place on a couple in a couple different countries,
and it's narrated and
there'd be a way to do that, like that it wouldn't be necessarily boring, but I think that works better in a novel usually than like in a movie, although I did like Coppola's version that kind of incorporated some of that. But so I understand why they did that. They're like, we need to shoot it in Bray Studios, so we just kind of want it to look like vaguely Germanic or whatever, like Central European, and we'll just say, well, they're just a couple countries apart, so it's not like ships, we don't have to do all that kind of crap. But here's another thing that they did, and I think like a couple of the later films did this either, and I still don't know why, and I wish someone would explain it to me. They kind of switched Lucy and Mina. Remember when we talked about the 1979 version with Frank Langella? They did it in that one too, and I don't really understand what they did in this one. Another thing that I didn't even notice while I was watching it, this one doesn't have Renfield in it either.
Not at all.
There's no Renfield.
Yeah.
No, which is crazy, because I think adaptations had Renfield. This one just doesn't even have Renfield. Dr. Seward is in it, but he's literally in one scene, and you wouldn't even know that it was Dr. Seward unless he just comes in as like he's the family doctor, and they're like, yeah, I'm gonna get a second opinion, bye. It's that kind of thing. So he's not like really a main character. What they did, like I said, Jonathan Harker gets killed at the end of the first act. Like, he gets vamped out, and then Van Helsing has to put him down, like put him out of his misery. And then it goes back to Bavaria. Now, Mina is in this, but Mina is already married, and she's married to Arthur Holmwood, who in the book, Arthur Holmwood was Lucy's fiance, right? Now, you do have Lucy in this, but Lucy and Arthur are brother and sister, and Lucy was engaged to Jonathan Harker. So Harker gets killed, and then Lucy is already starting to get sick, or because is already starting to get vampire disease, because the motivation for Dracula, as far as I could determine, the motivation for Dracula, like, starting to pick on Lucy and Mina and all them, is because he was mad that Harker had killed his vampire bride, consort. Yeah. And he's like, well, I'm going to take one of your bitches then.
Right.
It was basically that kind of, like, petty, which that's fair enough. I mean, that's fine. Maybe he really liked that one.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, in the book he had three, but, like, in this movie he just had one. And here's the thing, too. I was wondering about this. So Harker gets bit by the vampire bride, like, very near the beginning. She, at first, approaches him and it says, he's holding me here against my will, you have to help me, yada yada.
Her feminine wiles on him.
Yeah, now, was she really there against her will?
No.
Maybe she was, like, at the beginning, like, maybe he bit her and brought her there against, but yeah, she was just
pretending to be immortal.
She was just trying to get Harker close enough that she could, like, bite him.
Yeah, she was pretending to be a mortal woman. And the last thing she knew is that she was being held there as a mortal in the grips of a damn vampire. So that was the angle that she used.
She's like, oh my God,
she can play that role. Yeah, he's holding me here against my will.
And he's like, oh, okay, yeah.
She was a vampire.
Yeah, and then she's like, yeah, sucker.
Yeah, yeah.
That was that. But so I guess like Dracula was mad.
That was a great lie because the best lie is the one closest to the truth. He was holding her at first, yeah, but not anymore. I guess she knew that he knew that he was a vampire. If not, that's a good cover.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To just go with what was, you know, a lie that is closest to the truth is the one that will be believed. So, you know, that's what she did.
Yeah, I guess so.
She just kind of told the truth as it was back then, and that's passable. It worked, kind of, because he knew that that the dude was a vampire.
Yeah.
And she didn't tell him that, but he put two and two together. He's like, oh, he's going to turn her into a vampire. She was already a vampire.
Yeah.
Yeah, little did he know.
Yeah, well.
That's pretty good. Then he started fighting over him.
Yeah, Christopher Lee comes in and he's like, rah! And yeah, he's like all with that great iconic,
yeah,
like his red eyes and all his fucking
Jenny's
teeth and everything.
Jenny's going to probably critique the movie based upon what was included or excluded from the, you know, in the story from the book.
Well, I don't know if critique. I'm just interested in the differences.
I'm going to critique it on a lot more basic level. It didn't look good. All right. It was too bright. The colors weren't that strong. The sets were not very interesting. They were
I liked the sets.
I thought they were boring. It just didn't have any very much visual style. Now, it is the 50s, so maybe that was, you know, acceptable then. But they got a lot better looking in the 70s, the 60s and 70s, the way Hammer film looked. The sets looked a lot better, so did the costumes. I just thought the sets were wrong. It should have looked like a damn ancient, spooky, abandoned castle, kind of like, you know, in the old Universal films.
But see, I think that think they wanted to, like, get away from that, though. Because, like, well, I said, they were trying to do something, like, more...
Okay,
well, like, that was gothic, but for a modern day. Because, okay, yeah, the 30s ones were all, like, creepy, like, cobwebby castles. Whereas this one looked like a creepy castle, but it was more like one that looked like they had a maid.
Yeah.
You know?
Or, okay, then if they're going to go the way that they went in this one, at least darken it. So you can't see everything. So there's some mystery, more shadow and stuff.
Now, I have
that
heard...
That would have been a lot better looking.
The version that we watched is on HBO Max at the moment. Now, I've heard, and I don't know if this is the version that we saw on there, but I think that the latest Blu-ray edition of it has restored some of the original color grading and things like that, like that I imagine that the original DP, like, intended. And I've heard, I haven't seen it, but that is, like, darker around the edges. And the blacks are deeper, like the shadows are, so it is actually like darker.
So it probably was intended to look better.
Maybe.
Because it looks too much like a studio set and it looks kind of television-y. It doesn't look, it needed to be darker with more vibrant colors. Some of the editing and the camera angles, you wouldn't do that today, but I think a lot of the stuff that they did was based on the fact that cameras were big back then, and cameras didn't have very good tripods and things to set on back then. You couldn't really get a really intense angle during a fight scene. Blocking a choreography, fight choreography back then wasn't what it really would be, of course, today, or even in the 70s. The 70s was better. So my only problems with it is that it was not visually impressive. Had it been visually impressive, I probably would have liked the movie better. I would have been more entertained, I think. But the acting was good. The story was good. It was just kind of visually boring. That's my only complaint about it. If you're big into the British Hammer films, or if you want to get into Hammer films and Christopher Lee as a Dracula, this would be probably where to start.
This is probably where you should start. Because honestly, I think it's been a while since I've seen, because they made what, like 7, 8, 9 sequels to this. Now, like I said, Brides of Dracula was the sequel after this, and Christopher Lee wasn't in that one, but he came back for Dracula, Prince of Darkness and the subsequent ones. But this is probably the one to start with, because this is the first time that he played that character, and I think it's like his most iconic. Like, the later ones are good too. I like those. Like,
I remember
the
later
greater,
ones being better.
See, I don't know, like, because it's been a while since I've seen them. Like, some of the ones, especially some of the ones that came in, like, the 70s, I felt like were a little too dated or a little too, like, they were trying too hard to make it groovy, which, like, Dracula 80, 1972.
Yeah, so.
Which, it's fun, but I don't know.
That's
I
in the tone.
Right, I couldn't get, like, down with it. Whereas this one seems much more like just a lean and mean, like, thriller without... I mean, there is a little bit... I think the only criticism I'd have of it is I don't think it needed... It had, like, a couple scenes of, like, comic relief, quote-unquote. Like, I didn't mind the one funny guy, like the one, he was the Undertaker, right? Mm-hmm. Like the Undertaker guy and him making the joke about like somebody coming to like pay their last respects and then tripping over a step and dying and blah, blah, blah. So that was funny. But I don't think it needed, like, they did another scene where the coach came through and like broke his gate and then he fixed it all up and then the coach and then he's like, wah, wah, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, I don't think it needed that. But like I said, this is... Hammer, they had only done, this was only their second, you know, gothic horror thing. Like I said, Curse of Frankenstein was the first one. That was like a huge hit. This was also a huge hit, which is why they
did
made
we
so.
See Curse of Frankenstein?
I've seen it, but it's been a long time.
I don't think I've seen it.
That is also Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee. Like I said, Peter Cushing plays Dr. Frankenstein in that one, and Christopher Lee plays the monster, obviously, because like he said, he's...
Why would you put Christopher Lee as a damn monster?
Because he's 6'5".
Yeah, I guess so. Does he have any speaking role?
I don't think he talks in that.
Damn.
I don't think he talks in that.
Okay, the... Another thing that was kind of lacking is that there wasn't a lot of damn pimped out vampire special abilities. There was some stuff that Dracula could do as a Nosferatu that wasn't shown here, which I think that they should have shown it. They should have shown him mesmerize some people and fucking, I don't remember a single thing where somebody looked at him and he fucking froze him with his gaze and, you know what I mean, and fucking... did suggestion and like mind control.
Well,
Dracula could do that, kind of.
Right, but the the thing about it too is that I mean Terrence Fisher, who directed this, and he directed a fuck ton of Hammer movies, and Jimmy Sangster was the writer on it. And one of the things that they talked about specifically, they said, well, we kind of felt like the Universal monster movies, like the Bela Lugosi ones, they said those were almost kind of like a little bit more like fairy tales. And they're like, so when we were updating it for modern, we wanted it a little bit more, like obviously it's supernatural, but they wanted it a little more grounded in reality.
Okay,
so they basically were like, there's even a scene in this where Peter Cushing, like as Van Helsing, says to Arthur Holmwood, it's like, oh, you know, it's a myth that vampires can like turn into bats or whatever the fuck. So they were trying to like ground it more in reality. So he had fangs, he drank blood, he lived forever, and he was super strong, but he didn't really have any like magical powers.
Yeah,
and they did
bullshit.
That and they did that on purpose.
I'm gonna
like
call
I said.
Bullshit on it. I'm gonna say I disagree. They shouldn't have done that. At least if he couldn't turn into some bats or a wolf or anything like that, they at least could have explained it as, well, they have the power of mental domination. Okay. If you look at them and they make eye contact with them, it's very dangerous. That doesn't cost anything for that effect. The only thing for that effect would be fucking acting, all right? And then you could say they could even make you think that they were wolves or disappeared in a damn cloud of smoke, but it's all just an illusion. It's suggested into your mind. See, that's how you do that. You know what I mean?
The way they approached this one, and I think that that Peter Cushing even says this at one point in the movie too, was that he compares vampirism to
drug addiction
which is funny because they did that a lot later, like in a lot later movies. This might be the first time that I saw that comparison made explicit in a movie, so again, like kind of ahead of its time. But so he's basically come, and Christopher Lee even said too that he was coming at the idea of Dracula as, this is a guy who doesn't necessarily want to keep on living like this, but he doesn't really have a choice. You know what I mean? Mm. So he's just like this monstrous kind of, like he just keeps on keeping on, and he's just kind of like sick of the whole shit. But they did explicitly compare this to drug addiction. And I will argue too that while they don't make a specific like mesmerism type of thing, there is a weird kind of, and this was also deliberate because I read an interview with Terrence Fisher where he talked about them, you know, talking about this, was he's like, I want it to be very overtly sexual, that it's like, you know, Christopher Lee comes in and these ladies, you know, maybe their husbands aren't doing it for him anymore and they're just kind of like, you know, dick struck.
That's the whole vampire fucking lore.
Yeah.
Mental domination.
Yeah. Okay. Which they did do in
there's
this.
A bunch
it's
of
just
different
they didn't
ways
make it real explicit.
To explain that and show that. High charisma is mental domination. okay? Mind control by getting leverage on people is mental domination. Some of it could be empathetic psychic abilities, you know what I mean? Or just having a really good gab, fucking sales technique, scaring the shit out of people is mental domination. So, yeah, I don't think that's not an ability you strip from the character of fucking Dracula. Hell no.
But did you see, yeah, like, after he starts biting the chicks, like, yeah, after he starts biting Lucy, like, she's, you know, acting all, like, prim and proper and everything like that. She's but then yeah, she's, yeah, like, opening that window, yeah, going, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
right,
then, like, he bites Mina, too.
Yeah.
And then she's just like, yeah. You, yeah, know what I mean? It's like that kind of shit. And they did that very deliberately, right, because they wanted to make it seem like, and like I said, Terrence Fisher even said this. He said, I want to, particularly when Mina gets bit, he's like, I wanted to kind of imply that her husband, Arthur Holmwood, wasn't really, like, you know, satisfying her.
Right.
And that she, yeah, was getting something from the Dracula, right, that she wasn't getting from, right, like, from her husband.
Yeah, and then the whole thing about a vampire turning into a damn cloud of mist to escape something, I think that's... I would definitely let a vampire in my stories do that, okay? Even if it was just an illusion, you know? Like an illusion that was placed into your head. That's how you thought he got out. You know, it's like a parlor trick. I would still, that's a good ability. And it's cheap. It's cheap to have an effect like that with practical effects. You know, a smoke machine played in reverse can do that. Or fans and shit. You edited it the right way. And yeah, you know, fucking Dracula's there and he falls into a fucking cloud of fucking dry ice on the floor and fucking goes out underneath the damn door. That's a fucking badass shot. And other movies have done it, and I think they should have done it in a movie like this.
I don't know, though. I kind of, you know, yeah, you could argue that you like certain things better, but yeah, it's just kind of like, I like that they tried to do something different. Like I said, because there had been so much, particularly, yeah, with the original Universal monster movies, they said because they were more like fairy tales or because there was more quote-unquote magic, they wanted something that was a little bit more grounded,
yeah,
rather than mystical, because they thought it would make it easier to believe. Like, yeah, I guess because they're coming at it from, well, we're coming off of, you know, particularly in, yeah, horror and sci-fi, or coming off of like a science fiction era, so they thought, yeah, that it would maybe be harder for audiences to suspend their disbelief.
Reality.
Right, yeah, right. So I can see where they were coming from with that.
He had good enough special effects and good enough acting, the fucking, they would have bought it.
And I'm actually not sure if they reintroduced some of the more magical powers in the later films in the series, because I haven't seen them in a while, so I don't remember.
Look,
it's very possible that they may have.
When Bram Stoker's Dracula came out with, you know, oh, what's his name, fucking Gary Oldman, and that scene where they corner the vampire, and I think it was Mina, that was turning into a vampire?
Yeah.
And he... just, you see him and he opens up his cape and he's nothing but just a mass of fucking rats that hits the ground and runs away. Yeah. That I was impressed, man. I was impressed.
That did look
and
really
that
good.
Was the 90s. And yeah, it was a practical effect. You know. Yeah, it was expensive. But it just...
Yeah,
it
that was a very lavish production.
I was, whoa! And then you have to ask yourself, did Dracula really do that? Or did he just make you... Was that his power of suggestion? He made you think he exited the room that way. And you were so freaked out, you didn't follow him. Did he really just walk out the door or jump out the window?
Or maybe it was like some David Copperfield, yeah, shit.
He just jumps out the window,
an
really.
Illusion.
But he gave you a mental hallucination that he turned into rats and ran
and you're
away.
Like, holy
and
shit.
And you're a lot less likely to chase him. Fuck, I ain't going after that.
Yeah, never mind.
Yeah, nah, I ain't going after that.
You just keep on keeping on count.
Yeah, okay. I'm not going after a mass of damn rats that can form up into a vampire, you know. So I think that, you know, because it's psychological warfare, you know. So I wouldn't take that from a damn vampire character, just saying, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, Mama Waldy could turn into a bat. Didn't he turn into a bat? Or he turned into a bat and flew? The effect wasn't that good.
But maybe that's what they were afraid of. Because, right, I mean, to be fair, like in the 1930s one, that effect wasn't very good either. It's like, right, obviously you could see the string on the bat,
yeah,
and all that,
yeah,
kind of stuff. So maybe they just, like I said, maybe they thought that was too hokey.
Yeah.
Particularly for audiences of that time period who'd already seen the Universal films.
They didn't have the experience in the effects and how to edit it right and to get it to get the audience.
Yeah,
to buy
I mean, it was the late
1950s.
It was the late 1950s when this came out. And to be honest, like, for what they were trying to do, and it's not a hugely budgeted. I think it cost £81,000 to make, so which is nothing. So, I mean, considering that, I think they did a good job. And like I said, I know why they made the choices that they made, because they thought that this was, again, like, for a new generation. So they wanted to concentrate more on the physicality of Dracula. They wanted to concentrate more on the blood, like, more on that kind of stuff than the more mystical aspects. Which, like I said, you can argue that you like that better or worse, but that's what they were going for. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And particularly, I really like... I think my favorite part of this, I really like the parts with Lucy, like after she gets vampirized and turns into Bloofer Lady. They don't actually say that. That's what they called her in the book, but they didn't call her that in the movie. But yeah, where she's gonna like eat the kid or whatever. So I really like that. But I think my favorite part of this is like the final fight between Van Helsing and Dracula, because they're actually fighting. You know what I mean? Which I thought was kind of cool. There's not this whole, you know, I'm going to hold up. But he, you know, actually, like, Van Helsing is actually really, really physical in this, too. Like, he's jumping up on the dining table and getting the candlesticks and holding the candlesticks out. And then, like, at the end, he runs down that long table and jumps up and pulls those fucking curtains down. Yeah. And then, like, Christopher Lee is like, shit. Then, like, he starts, like, disintegrating and it's all gross and shit.
For a skinny guy, I mean, he probably weighed 125 pounds. He was fucking running around. You realize that?
Yeah.
How skinny that dude is?
I know.
Yeah.
And actually, well, he was like, it's funny because when they first asked him to play Van Helsing, he was like, that's going to be, he's like, what, are you going to put old man makeup on? Because Van Helsing in the book, you know, is an old man.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's really dumb. Why don't you just get an old person? Old guy, yeah. But they were like, no, we want you. He's like, well, then I'll just play it as me. Like, I'll just play it as a younger character. Because that would be ridiculous if they tried to, like, old him. And I, honestly, I'm going to say, of all the Dracula movies, of all the everything, I think that he's my favorite Van Helsing.
I mean,
he's the most iconic. He's probably my favorite Dr. Frankenstein, too, gonna be honest with you. I fucking love Peter Cushing. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think there's been a better Van Helsing.
I will say that the strength of this particular movie is Van Helsing and Dracula. The acting's good.
I mean, the two of them are so fucking great. Yeah.
I'd like to see the original color version of it, you know what I mean, with the color corrections.
That's what I've heard. I've heard that the original, and I think it was 2018, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe one of you guys knows. But not only have they restored some of the scenes that were cut out, because there were some censored scenes, like with more explicit, like staking scenes.
I like that board.
Which and more shots of Dracula disintegrating at the end, because they did like trim some of that out, because the censor board
it's
was like,
better.
Oh no, it's 1958. There wasn't a huge amount taken out, but there were like little things like that taken out. And I heard that the color grading on it is a little bit warmer, a little bit darker. It's kind of dark around the edges.
Yeah.
And the shadows are darker. That's what I heard.
That's what it needed.
So like overall darker.
So it's probably better. It's not just me that noticed it then. It looked washed out and too bright. It didn't have a spooky
tone. Is, yeah. Well, yeah, it is very bright.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe there's not like there wasn't enough. I didn't really notice because I'm used to like watching Hammer films, and I'm used to watching British films from that time period. So they all just kind of look like that. But yeah, I can, now that you're talking about it, I can kind of see what you're talking about, where it needed more like contrast,
more
I guess.
More contrast, it needed darker shadows, the brighter tone to the colors and darker, you know what I mean, and with an overall like a darker filter on it.
Yeah.
To make those interiors seem a little bit more mysterious and menacing and better looking to the eye. They just look basic to me.
Yeah.
You know, like something you'd see made for TV. And it didn't have to be, because the quality of them was pretty good. It's just that the way they looked on film, the way they were shot, was super basic.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, honestly, yeah, if you're kind of new to Hammer films, or if you're new to Christopher Lee or anything like that, or Peter Cushing for that matter, then probably this is one of the first ones you want to watch. I kind of feel
and
like
the later Hammer flicks look a lot better than this. I was expecting one of the later ones. with the color contrast, the darker shadows, and the sets.
No, this was only like their, like I said, it was their second one. It was their first Dracula movie.
So if you've ever seen the Hammer Flicks, don't judge Hammer Flicks based on this one, because they actually get a lot better looking. I was expecting one of the, you know, the way, expected this one to be kind of like the way the ones I'm used to look, which if it had looked like that, I would have liked it better.
Although story-wise, I think this one might be a little bit better than, even though, like I said, it's not all that, like, it takes a lot of liberties with the source material, but it's still close enough to the story that, like, you kind of know what's going on. Like, it has, like, most of the stuff
in there.
Okay. Yeah. So I thought, and I thought the choices that they made, like, to tighten the story up were actually, like, good choices, I thought. Because, like I said, this is very short. It's only, like, 86 minutes. So they don't, like, fuck around, you know? And as I said, I think kind of the best things about it, like I said, obviously, are Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee. I mean, Christopher Lee is so... Just everything about his Dracula is so good in this. Just like him walking across a room, he just conveys so much, like with his body language.
I would
have
liked some more dialogue with him.
But like I said, I kind of feel like he wanted to play it more like a monster, more like the original character, because the Dracula from the book is not a romantic character. He's a villain, you know. I mean, he's yucky.
Yeah, there were some things in Lugosi's version that he said that I don't even think they were from the book, but Lugosi's version said some cool shit that really I think kind of has to be said in every vampire. Like there's a part where he's talking to Van Helsing and he was saying that his main strength is that you do not believe. In other words, you know, a vampire's his main strength is that society doesn't believe that he exists. And it just said a lot of kind of deep things in a way. I mean, of course, you know, that's kind of a simplistic thing, but just the way he says it, it sounds really important. Like, yeah, that's right. You can get away with a lot of shit if people don't believe, you know. And I don't think Cushing said anything like that. There's no hint of any kind of vampire culture of how a vampire lives or how a vampire thinks. Not really. Just a monster.
Yeah, in this one, he definitely just comes off as, like, a monster, like a one-and-done. Yeah. And that he's been around for a long time and has been preying on the populace for a long time. It has to be kind of taken down, you know what I mean?
Which, that's one thing I can kind of ding it on. I think Lugosi loved that role, and he made sure to put a bunch of stuff in there, from Dracula's point of view. Which I think that's kind of a nice touch, because Lugosi loved that role. He did a lot of that role. He was doing that role on stage for a long time.
Yeah, lots of.
He fucking loved that role, and I think to a large extent, when you think of Dracula, you're actually thinking of Lugosi's Dracula.
He did like introduce. I think when you think of like a modern vampire, or when you talk about like modern vampire movies, I think most of that comes from Christopher Lee's portrayal. But when you're talking about like the classic Halloween vampire, like the costume and everything like that, that's Bela Lugosi's. Thing.
Yeah,
I mean that's where all that came
and
from.
And kind of like a sex symbol type thing. That's Lugosi. From the book. That's not really what you're talking about. From the book, Dracula was that. He was a Nosferatu.
Yeah.
He looked like Shrek, like a rat.
He had a mustache.
Yeah.
I was watching, like I said, I was watching that Cinemassacre thing where he was talking about, he's like, you know, the only kind of well-known Dracula adaptation that actually had Dracula have a mustache was Jess Franco's version, which was also Christopher Lee. That was not a Hammer movie.
I think that's
the only one that he had a mustache.
Bela had a version where he played a vampire, but it wasn't Dracula because he didn't have the rights or something, and he was wearing a damn mustache.
It might have been.
Yeah,
he made so many horror films.
It was a real bad B-movie one, but he had like a little mustache on and a little goatee. I think, pretty sure he was playing a vampire.
Well, now, he did have a mustache and a goatee in White Zombie.
Maybe that was White Zombie.
Yeah, so he wasn't a vampire. Yeah, he was like a voodoo
guy.
Yeah, right. like a guy that did voodoo.
But they tried to make some vampire movies with Lugosi, but they couldn't call him Dracula.
Yeah.
There's like a couple of those out there.
It's just hilarious to me, like, how many different... They came up with this, like, it's Count Alucard.
Yeah, Count Yorga.
Yeah, that was like a 70s one. Yeah. We should probably do that one. I think that one's actually...
I remember it being terrible.
There was two of them, actually. Yeah. There was one, there was a Count Yorga, and then there was a sequel as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, we should probably do that as well. But I, like I said, I think Christopher Lee, even though he was always trying to get the character closer to what was in the book, you know what I mean? And I think he was kind of disappointed that Hammer kept going farther and farther afield, but in this one you could tell that he was trying to go back to like the OG, like the character from the book, where he was much more, like I said, much more like animalistic or imposing. He wasn't like romantic necessarily or sympathetic. He wanted him to just be like this kind of just carnal monster type of thing, and I think he really succeeded in that.
Yeah,
you know,
although, you know, they should have had some transformation scenes where he's actually, you find out, maybe when you look at him, he looks like a man, and he plays as a man, but it's all just a trick of the mind. He actually looks like that. He actually looks like a rat Nosferatu.
Yeah. And he's casting a glamour spell.
to make me look like hot-ass
Christopher Lee.
Yeah, and that's how you see him, and that's how you see him in the film, and that's what you see him when you're looking at him, but it's in your mind. If he goes in front of a mirror and you look at the mirror, you see what he really looks like. He looks like a Nosferatu. That'd be really cool. And then when he gets pissed, he can't keep the glamour up, and he turns into, and you actually see him for what he looks like. I mean, that'd be effective.
Or like before he's gonna attack somebody. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I mean, there's been
he drops the fucking charade, right, and fucking you can see the way he really looks.
I mean, there's been a million Dracula adaptations and like offshoots, so it wouldn't shock me if somebody had thought of doing that before, but I've never heard of that being done. But
that's how I would do
that
it.
Actually would be kind of interesting.
Because why keep up the effort? If you're going to just start, you know, killing somebody anywhere, fighting someone, you don't have time to keep up the damn looking.
I don't have time to look good.
Yeah, I don't have time to look good. It requires concentration.
Just deal with me what I really look like. Yeah, I look like Klaus Kinski with big old fucking teeth. In
yeah,
the front, like,
yeah, oh. Huge ears and fucking teeth and fucking long nose. Yeah.
Yeah. Be kind of harder to, like, seduce ladies looking like that, though.
Yeah.
Not impossible, but...
Well, he can mesmerize. He got mental domination. He's scared out of a woman.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's too late now.
You know? Ew. Yeah. That's like the ultimate beer goggles. You wake up next to that in the morning. Oh, my God. What did I do last night?
Once you turned into a vampire, though, the woman slowly starts transforming to look like that, too.
So it's okay.
Yeah, there's nothing she can do about it. And she's now like addicted, you know, to the damn blood and everything. So she just turns into one of those. That's kind of like what that damn blood vessel movie was. Remember with the with the damn, what do they call those things?
The Strigoi.
Yeah, Strigoi. Yeah, I liked the Strigoi.
I did too.
And his girl was kind of hot. Looked like a hot, evil-looking rat chick with boobs and shit. Yeah, she was all into it and everything.
I have the weirdest boner right now situation?
Kind of. No, she just had that rat sexuality. And then they were also sorcerers. So they're doing magic and shit.
Yeah, they're doing, like, had witchcraft
quite
angle.
Cool, yeah.
Actually, I really liked that movie.
Yeah, and now,
if you haven't seen Blood Vessel, check it out.
Yeah, and that was, like, the original. That's where the stories of vampires came from. Was Strigoi.
Yeah, like they're monstrous like that.
Yeah,
like kind of.
That's where all this Nosferatu vampire bullshit that you're hearing from, you know, Bram Stoker. He just heard stories of Strigoi and ripped it off.
You know, it's Stoker, right?
Stoker, yeah. That's what I said.
No, you said Stroker.
No, I didn't.
You did. Like Stroker Ace.
It's my accent.
Bram Stoker Ace.
Yeah, Bram Stoker.
The mashup that we never knew we needed. Bram Stoker.
I'm mush-mouthed anyway.
Bram Stoker and...
I'm too old to enunciate. I don't give a fuck.
It's Bram Stoker and what's-his-ass that was in Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah, I don't know.
They team up and, like, driving around in the fucking Trans Am. Getting good. It's like I invented a whole new movie.
Yeah.
All right, so are we done talking?
Yeah.
All right, so if you want to see... the first Christopher Lee Dracula movie, it's Horror of Dracula. It's actually just called Dracula in the UK. It's just called Horror of Dracula in the US because the original Dracula from 1931 was apparently still playing in theaters here because it was, you know, they re-released it. So they didn't want any confusion. So they actually call it Horror of Dracula in the United States. It's on HBO Max at the moment, and I'm sure you can get it other places as well. But yeah, check it out. Or if you've seen it, let us know what you think about it in the comments. And we will see you again on the next movie retrospective. Bye.